need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Welcome to the show. This is Bill Arnold with George Fraser. Once again, we are in the studio with limited adult supervision. How are you, George?
I'm well, Bill. How are you?
Well, things are going pretty well with me, so I'm obviously overlooking something. That's my feeling.
Optimistic.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. But we are pretending to... work here, and they're pretending to pay us, so let's get to the show.
Sounds good. A great show last time, and I'm looking forward to hearing more. You cut the guy off, you know?
Well, I had to, George. It's called a hard break in radio. I know that's radio lingo that you're not aware of.
It goes right by me.
Yeah,
what a great story.
But there's no way to segue out of the break like that. It just stops, and that's what happened when we had Jeff on. We had to just pretty much cut him off, and he had so much more story to tell. We invited him back for part two, and we've never done that before on our show. We've never had a guest that has come back for part two. Usually after part one, they say no more.
No, usually they don't take our calls. The great thing for me was his openness about where he's at, where he's been, what Jesus has done in his life. And to top that off, he plays a lot of golf. He's my kind of guy.
Yeah, so we're going to have a great part two interview with Jeff. We're excited that he's going to be with us tonight on the telephone. He's coming from, I think he's in Iowa tonight.
Nashville, Iowa, I think.
Nashville, Iowa, yeah. Well, you know your geography well, don't you?
Right.
Yeah.
I learned last week there's a Minneapolis, Kansas, a Minneapolis, North Carolina, and a Minneapolis, Minnesota, and apparently you need the right map.
George, that's patronizing.
That was your deal.
Don't patronize me.
Okay, I won't. I hadn't tried it in previous 42 shows, so I thought I'd roll it out tonight.
Well, no, you're entitled to be unlikable, but I think tonight you're abusing the privilege.
Okay.
Yeah.
My apologies
no
to
problem.
You, Mr. Arnold.
No problem. George, let's talk a little bit about whatever step you've got up on the docket there tonight. Let's talk about, is it step 12?
Well, I thought we'd do step 12 tonight after listening to Jeff last week, because he really covered, you know, pretty much the whole lifespan of a recovery of a guy, you know, struggling with some issues, finding God, working through it, and then life shows up and hits you in the face. You know, just because we get sober and start a relationship with Jesus, it seems like everybody goes, everything's going to be great all the time. And most of our experiences is that's just not true. Life comes up and we have to deal with life.
Right. So tell our listeners a little bit more about step 12. You're listening to Real Recovery, which is a story of a show about recovery from addictions of all kinds, and including basically a sinful lifestyle that you used to lead if you were once unsaved. Boy, that was awkward. George, you and I are the patron saints of awkward.
That was my bit.
I know, usually is your bit.
I'm supposed to do that.
Well, why don't you try it then?
I'm sure I lost it after that riveting performance. So
why don't you try it?
What Real Recovery's about is we think that all Christians are in recovery from our past lives. And you don't have to be alcoholic or drug addict to be in recovery. But if you have a drug problem or a sin problem, which we all do, and you don't have Jesus Christ in your life, your recovery is still idolatrous. We think addiction and all sin is idolatry. We want to be God rather than having Jesus be God. And so if you are abstaining from a chemical, great. But if you don't have Jesus Christ, you don't have recovery.
And how about if you're trying to save yourself, you're addicted, because you're addicted to trying to save yourself?
Well, there's a performance-based thing we get into, even as Christians, that we try to do it ourselves and have, you know, a performance behavior salvation. Doesn't work.
True. So anyway, tell our listeners about step 12.
Well,
you did a nice job telling about the show.
That was patronizing, wasn't it?
It was a little bit.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Thank you. You can do it. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry the message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. And what this means, if you haven't had a spiritual awakening, a connection with Jesus, maybe you need to work the steps. What they do is ego deflation. I can't do it. He can do it. I'm going to let him do it. We take a look at our lives in step 4. We confess in step 5. Now, let's be honest here. 12-step programs are great. But unless I get forgiveness for my sins, and there's only one deity who can do that is Jesus, I don't get salvation. And so we want to get that. Then we look at our defects of characters, our shortcomings. We try to make things right in reparation steps 8 and 9, make direct amends. And then we continue to do this every day, Bill. I look on recovery and our walk with Jesus like when we were kids, we'd go to the mall and walk up the down escalator, run up it.
No,
and
I wouldn't.
Yeah, you would.
No, I wouldn't. I wasn't that dumb of a kid.
When'd you do it, in junior high?
No, just continue your little story, though.
It's a great analogy. You killed it.
Why not? Just go ahead and share.
So if you stop going forward, you stay not in the same place. You're going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our walk. We've got to have an active walk. And then in 11, we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with Jesus, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out, not our will. And then we get to step 12, and we're going to try to carry the message to people like this show. If people are out there hurting and hopeless, hey, so are we. And we've got a great source to go to, the redemptive power of Jesus Christ. We want to practice these principles in all our affairs. We don't want to just go, hey, I'm not drinking anymore, so everything else I do is okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pray that you freshen up your analogies a little.
That's the best I got. You don't like the escalator? See, that works for me.
I liked it the first 18 times.
Did you?
Yeah. And I got clubbed over the head with it so many times that I'm starting to get resistant to it.
So hurt by your comments, but true.
Anyway.
So that's what we're looking at tonight. I thought it would be great because Jeff's first part of his story, he's talking about all areas of his life, being a husband, being a dad.
Tell you, he backed the truck up, didn't he?
Oh, man.
Back it up, Sal.
Oh, gosh.
Right here. It was amazing. He was very vulnerable, very candid, very honest, very funny. I mean, this is why we were excited to have him back.
Well, he's very real and very likable guy. I couldn't wait to do the show today.
Really?
And normally I'm not that jacked about it, you know?
You sometimes surprise me. So step 12 is going to tie nicely into his continuing story because, like all of us, we have to continue to share our hope with others and encourage people who have an issue with addiction or with a sin condition, and we all need encouragement. It says, as iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another.
Good. Do you want me to sharpen you?
No, I just need a sip of water, so why don't you say something interesting?
Well, I don't know about interesting, but I think what you say is exactly right. And the way we do it is not by talking. We do it by walking. We do it by being involved in people's lives. You don't do that from a distance. You do it by being close. You know, how are our relationship with people?
We do it by talking, Joe. We don't. George.
Yeah. George.
We don't have a we don't have a walking show. We have a talking show. This is what we do. We talk.
But we're walking the walk.
Yeah, I know. But we have to talk the walk as well. We have to do both.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm correcting you a lot today.
This is going to be one of our best shows once Jeff starts.
Why do you say that?
Because we just, you know, we're kind of fumbling today more than we normally do.
Well, we're the patron saints of awkward.
I like that. The important thing on this is if you have the love of Jesus, you don't hoard it. You've got to share it.
You give it away.
And, you know, for those of us who are working our recovery, we need to work with other guys to get the true joy of our deliverance from Jesus. The great high in my life, and I think in yours, Bill, is when we work with guys down at the Salvation Army, see them come in all beat up. They meet God, and then 6 months later, they graduate and start working with other guys.
Mm-hmm. It is an unbelievable transformation.
Well, it's the part, you know, John 10:10. Jesus said, I came to give you life and give it to you abundantly. And the abundant life is sharing the joy of a redempted life that you can only get through Jesus with other people.
And every one of them, I would say, for the most part, has incredibly bad information about God. They show up to the army with horribly bad information about
God.
Yeah, it's incredible. So it's not surprising that you have a hard time surrendering to God when you have really bad information about Him.
Well, part of the reason is a lot of the people that say they represent Him aren't biblically based. There's a lot of things guys come in with that we work with that say they don't like God because of this, this, and this. And it's like, where is that in the Bible?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to go to break here pretty soon, not quite yet, but let's set up a little bit about Jeff's previous interview. George, what do you specifically remember that struck you? I'm just seeing if you're paying attention.
Wow, you guys. George partied too long and too hard. That was a couple weeks ago. But what I remember most, what really stood out to me, was his openness about who he was, what he did, and what Jesus did for him.
Yeah, and I would concur. That was so strong, and we're very excited to have him back on the air. He is in Iowa today, and I believe he is right now on the line. Jeff, are you there?
I'm at home. I'm in Nashville. I go to Iowa next month.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome from Nashville.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you are all throughout the upper Midwest right now on the radio. So nice to have you on the show. Yeah, we are in Dakotas, North Dakota, South Dakota, Duluth.
I just think it was so nice of you guys to drop the charges and let me come back.
Well, that was not all of our, that was partly the police as well.
Oh, that's a cooperative deal, Jeff, so.
Nothing like forgiveness, that's what I said.
We do our best. Well, we just wanted to make sure you're on board for part two of your interview. I know you've had a chance to think about more about what you want to share with our audience, and we're thrilled you can be with us tonight. We've got we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to start gunning you with questions. Is that cool?
I'm cool.
All righty. All right. You listen to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Frazier on Faith Radio. We'll be back in just a second. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold and George Frazier sitting in for Bill Arnold and George Frazier. Well, that's a little throwback to 70s rock and roll, isn't it, George?
Skynyrd?
Yeah, it was Skynyrd.
What song?
I don't know, but it's a great song. You grew up on 70s rock, as did I. Rock and roll was perfected in 74. Everybody knows that.
Best concert I ever saw, Skynyrd, 73.
Yeah, well, that's, again, rock was perfected back then.
You bet.
Anyway, welcome back to the show. We are talking part two of our interview with Jeff Allen, a comedian who lives in Nashville and tours extensively over the country as a hilarious comedian. And welcome back to the show, Jeff.
Thanks for inviting me back, man.
Yep. We spoke to our lawyers, and they said, go ahead and do it. So we thought, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, my manager's freaking out. He just has no idea what I dumped you last week. So he just wants to know if I still have a career that he can promote.
Well, you can tell him emphatically no.
No, I know. That's the big fear.
Well, we sure appreciate the interview from last time. And if you did not get a chance to hear the interview, certainly go on to myfaithradio.com, and you can go to the Real Recovery page and scroll down to Jeff Allen Part 1, and it will get you all up to speed. And you can hear it then, but we're back now for Part 2.
Yes, yeah. We are. Hey, Jeff, can you give us a little recap of what you talked about last time, kind of, you know, just an overall picture of how you started and how you met the Lord and what some of the issues you dealt with, just so people that missed the show last week can come in and join us?
Well, I can kind of lead us right into where we're at today.
Excellent.
You don't get into alcoholic, you know, you don't get into AA and into recovery if things are going well. And I was an angry, bitter, jaded, cynical, foul-mouthed man. My wife used to say to me, every time you roll your eyes, because I used to roll my eyes when she would say things, she goes, you make me feel, you know, small.
Were there any commas between those words, or was that just one giant word?
What?
Angry, bitter, cynical.
Yeah, that kind of covers it.
It kind of is.
So after 8 or 9 years of all of that, she had asked for a divorce. And anyway, as God would have it, he didn't want us to divorce. And somehow managed to crack through that shell that I had built around my soul and saved our marriage. And to put it in perspective, 2 weeks ago, my wife came to me and said, you remind me of the man you were 25 years ago. So I'm at a point now, which I'm at a blessed point right now, because I'm really starting to come out of a deep hole. I've been into a, a dark hole for the past few months. And in realizing now, as I begin to journal and go back and do the steps, I'm just finished the second column in step four. And I left Panera, which is where I do all my step four work. Because, you know, if you're going to throw something against the wall, you know, you'd rather not do it at home because then you got to spackle it. So I left exhilarated. I called my sponsor and I said, I cannot believe I have waited this long to do another four step. The first part of that, as you know, is you're building the list of resentments. And he told me to go back in five-year increments until I couldn't think back any longer. So I called him up and they said, he goes, what was the last age you got to? And I said, five. My mother went to work and left me at home. The witch abandoned me to my brother, who pounded at me relentlessly for the next 20 years of my life. So he said, okay, that's young enough, I guess, you know, five. So, I'm in a much better place now. My eyes are above the hole. And a friend of mine said, well, now if you could just quit crapping in the hole, you'll be all right. So, but, I'm in a precarious place because I'm coming out of a bad space. It wasn't, you know, 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, I guess, I had convinced myself that Tammy was ready to leave me. I convinced myself. I didn't think to ask her, mm-hmm. you know. I just kind of got inside my head. And, you know, it's interesting. Somebody told me at church a while ago that as we sin, it binds us to the earth and our flesh. And those things that that are eternal can't get to us when we're bound to earth and flesh. And I really felt that as abandoned. I don't know if that's the word I wanted to use. I mean, you know, intellectually, you know, God doesn't abandon you. God, because scripture doesn't lie. So God will not abandon you, will not forsake you. But then the author of all the lies, I call him, you know, the enemy of my soul, tells me, where's your God now? Where is he now? You know, and
does he ever sound like E.G. Marshall?
E.G. Marshall.
Where's your God now?
Where's your God now? Or what's his name?
That's what I'm afraid of.
Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Where's your now? Where's he now? So I did what I only know how to do, and that's get on my knees and beg for some kind of relief and guidance. And God put a wonderful sponsor in my path about a couple months ago. And, you know, I had mentioned last week that I had gotten involved in some things that were lust-oriented,
mm-hmm.
that were threatening to destroy everything that God had built. And it's interesting. I was blogging today. I'm starting to blog again. And one of the things that came to me as I was blogging was, I had taken credit for all of what God had done. I don't know at what point that happened, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever point that happened. I think God gave me a glimpse of what I create over the last few months. And it was a destruction, another recipe for disaster. So
I like that a lot, Jeff. You know, here, Bill, we've got a guy that hits his knees when he knows he's in trouble. And he realizes we all do this. When God rescues us, we take credit for it. We do. We hear people talk about going back and relapsing, Jeff, after many years of recovery because they stopped doing what they were doing. And I think a lot of us is we forget that we were broken. As you said, you didn't come into this deal flying first class on a winning streak, and you knew right back where to go. And for me, what's really encouraging here, there have been times in my recovery where I cannot feel God. I know he's there, but boy, I'm not feeling it, you know? And we got to go on faith and just keep reaching out. And I really like the part about doing the four step. The four step, the resentment, the fears, and the sex conduct, we got to get down to causes and conditions, don't we?
Absolutely. You know, and it was interesting because I was in my head, which is a really bad place to be.
It's a dark world. I can relate, yeah.
And, again, I convinced myself that Tammy's fed up and she's leaving, you know, because I've seen the looks and that's, you know, and anyway, you know, the skeptics, you know, one of the things that when you were just talking that popped into my head was, one of the things that I like to say in my shows when I'm working for a group of, where I know there's a lot of large non-believers in there. And I said, for me to explain to you what I love about Jesus and what I know about Jesus would almost cheapen it, to use words. I said, it would be like you asking me, what do you love most about your wife? I can give you tangibles. I can give you objective things, you know, how pretty she is, how intelligent she is. And you know, a true skeptic would go, well, I can find a prettier woman and I can find a more a smarter woman, certainly. She's not the smartest woman on the planet. So would you fall out of love with your wife or fall in love with this woman? I would go, no. Because there's so many different things that bind me to her existentially and spiritually that I can't explain it to you. I can't. There's certain times that I look at my wife on the couch while we're watching TV and I get overwhelmed with something, you know, and there have been nights, and I'm not saying every night, there are nights I look at her and go, wow. You know, are you still wearing those cowboy pajamas? You know? But there are times where, and it's unexplainable. You really can't. And that's where faith lives for me. I know God is there. I can't feel him, and it's a lonely place to be. But that's why you get on your knees, and that's why you pray. Because you take it upon that God's word is true in the Bible, that he will be there. He is there. So I had gotten away from that. You know, my prayers were perfunctory, you know, laying in bed. I never even bothered to get out of my bed and get on my knees. You know, you know, the serenity prayer occasionally, you know. And, you know, I had a reserve tank, you know, for 20-plus years in recovery and studies and things. And two or three years I got away from it. Again, this is hindsight. But I got a glimpse of a very lonely, dark place, and I don't want to be there. You know, I lived my life there up until I was 38 years old and gave my life, or 40, when I gave my life to Christ. And he revealed a universe to me that I never knew existed. And I crawled back into my old universe for a brief period, and it's a very dark place. I don't want to be there.
Jeff, when you're writing comedy, does melancholy or a cynical spirit help you when you write?
Oh. You know, there's stuff I write that I go, ah, I can't do that one at the church.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. We were talking last night. I was at a writing class, and there were a lot of young bloggers there, and they were talking about what do you do about negative comments. And I said, you just don't hit send. You write them out. I write out two or three different ones, and then I pray and ask God what he would have me say. And it's usually a kinder and gentler response. And as far as, you know, comedy, it was interesting. And when I was in going through that stuff for the past couple months, I wanted to get more into social commentary. And because I was listening to the news a lot and projecting, you know, bad things for the I wanted to start hammering people. When, you know, I work inside out. So when I was in my addictions and in that anger and stuff and early in my career, I poured bile out on the audiences. But since, you know, Christ took my heart, you know, people ask what's different. I go, I smile a lot more. I'm not as vicious. You know, to me, I'm not, you know, so,
you know,
when my wife said to me, you know, you remind me of the man you were 25 years ago, it scared me because she knows me better than anybody outside of God. Nobody knows me better than my wife, and, scared me. And to put a nice little bow on this, two nights ago at dinner, we stopped eating dinner in front of the television. And we started eating dinner at the kitchen table, just the two of us, so that we could actually have
an adult conversation. And we also shut off the television at night. We used to go to bed at 10:30, and we would flip on, you know, Fox News or Beck's Blaze or something, and she'd fall asleep watching that. Well, I started reading the Bible to her a couple months ago. We went through Matthew, Mark, Luke. We're in John now. She falls asleep after a couple of paragraphs. but I read two chapters a night to her while she nods off. Well, anyway, a couple nights ago, she had got up to go to the restroom and was going back to get her dinner, and she stopped, and she put her arms around me and gave me a kiss on the cheek and said, it's nice to have you back. And I give all of the glory to God for that.
That is so sweet.
That's a nice moment, Bill.
Well, it is. It's a moment in which, you know, when you're married 26 years, that's all you can hang on to. You know, I love talking to young married couples. Well, I'm going to, you know, we're going to, you know, yeah, okay, you let me know how that works out for you.
We're going to just take a very short break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue more with Jeff Allen. We're glad you're listening tonight. This is Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Frazza on My Faith Radio. We'll be back in a minute. Hello, hello. Welcome back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Frazza. Listen to the energy tonight, George.
There's a lot of energy. Who's that band now, Bill?
It's Leonard, too.
Is it?
Yep. I don't know what I got into there. A couple of cuts. But welcome back to the show. We are talking to Jeff Allen tonight. He's a comedian, lives in Nashville, tours all over the country. And he is, you know, how would I say this, George? Spilling his guts.
He's one of us. He's a regular guy.
Yeah, yeah. And Real Recovery is a show that is about real stories, real people. And this is so perfect fit.
We get to hear what Jesus has done in his life, and he's talking about doing his part. And before the break, he was talking about doing step four and working with a sponsor. How's that going for you?
Great. Back to basics. You know, it's, you know, one of the things I do when I mentioned to my wife that I thought she was going to leave me, she kind of looked at me and said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "I don't know, babe." I said, "It's just the vibe in the house and the feeling around and all this stuff. I just had convinced myself that I was going to come home one day and you were going to be gone." And she said, "I ain't going anywhere." And she goes, "The difference between now and 25 years ago is you have a whole bag of tools. And I'm seeing you use them, and you'll be back." And sure enough, you know, we have tools. It was interesting when I first got into recovery. You know, I used to listen to tapes, and I don't know if you remember an AA speaker called Bob Earl, but he was pretty popular on the circuit and stuff. So anyway, I got one of his tapes, and he had a thing about relationships. And at that time, you know, I'm new sober and marriage is not doing very well. And, you know, I covered all that last week. But anyway, he says he had five songs and dances that he did with all of his relationships. You know, a song might be a special restaurant, you know, and he would tell these girls that he first met. He goes, "You know, this is one of my favorite places. I've never taken a date here, you know, so she'd feel special." And he says, "You know, I take him." Another song might be, "I take her up to a special place in the Hollywood Hills. I used to shoot heroin up here by myself. I never brought a date here, you know." So, anyway, you know, But whenever the songs and dances were played out, the relationship was over. He goes, I knew it. They didn't, you know. And he says, when I got successful years later as a writer, I was able to throw a credit card across the breakfast table, and that would prolong the relationship a little longer. But anyway, I just knew that it was over. And it hit me that that's the way I, up until meeting my wife, that's what I did. I dated, I had songs and dances, and I would play them out, and that would be the end of the relationship. And Scott Peck said it better in Road Less Traveled, true love can't even begin in a relationship till conflict enters the relationship. Conflict always enters loving relationships. So you can't even begin to grow in true love until you learn to handle conflict. Well, that hit me because I realized that every relationship prior to meeting my wife was when conflict entered, I left. So the songs and dances would be played out, then conflict would enter, and then that would be it. I would go, who needs the hassle? I don't need the hassle. So I hear this, and basically the gist of the tape was you need a new bag of tools to replace the songs and dances in order to grow in your relationship. So I go, wow, that's great. I'm a guy. I can get tools. I know tools. I know fixing. I know, you know, all the lingo. So I run home with my little tape and I plug it in and tell Tammy, you have to hear this. So she listens to the whole tape and she's weeping. And I'm thinking those are tears of joy that her husband is going to get these tools and he's gonna grow and be a man of honor and integrity. And she goes, if you wanted a divorce, why didn't you just ask me? Stupid little tape. So from then on, every time I had something to play for my wife, I would play it for the neighbor's wife and go, tell me, what are you hearing? Because it's not what you say, it's what they hear you say. By the time it gets processed and into the heart, it may be a completely different thing.
Jeff, I heard another author who wrote a book on relationships and conflict say that it's not necessarily the conflict, but the way in which conflict is brought up that makes the difference.
Oh, sure.
Do you consider that to be a fact in your relationship with Tammy? And
that I believe it is absolutely. You know, there's certain ways. We were taking a class at Sunday school called Love and Respect, and she wants love, I want respect. And it resonated with us because I used to say to her, I just get the impression you have no respect for me. And then she would say, why would I, the way you treat us? When a man feels disrespected, he's going to lash out or he's going to shrink, one or the other. And when a woman feels unloved, she is going to lash out or shrink. It's interesting because it creates a cycle of I'm unloved, therefore I'm going to lash out, so I feel disrespected. Well, if I feel disrespected, I'm going to lash out, so she's going to feel unloved. If she feels unloved, she's going to lash out, and I'm going to feel disrespected. So, and he said, you can do this cycle for years. And we looked at each other and busted up laughing. We did do that for years because she would say, I just don't get the impression you love me. And I go, what are you talking about? I just told you I love you. Now leave me alone. You kidding me?
I love you. Jeff, do you think it's fair to say that the quality of our recovery and our walk can be measured in the quality of our relationships?
Yeah, how you treat others. You know, I always loved, I heard a sermon years ago. You know, God gave us 10 commandments. The Jews got it up at one point to 660-some rules and regs. Then David came along and knocked it down to 100-something. Anyway, Jesus got it down to 2. Love God, love your neighbor. One of the things about recovery that as I'm getting back really into it now, and it's amazing how service-oriented recovery is. It's getting out of yourself and doing for others. And my sponsor told me, he said, do for your wife. So I have, you know, emptied the dishwasher. I look for things to do now that I would have probably, you know, it's not that I never emptied the dishwasher. It's not that I never did laundry. It's not that, but I'm aware of it again, and it's doing for her. Consequently, that's godly. I mean, when you look at what Jesus did for us, the ultimate sacrifice, and that was displayed as love, that is love, then why wouldn't how we treat other people be godly? You know, I don't know anybody that's a cynic and bitter and jaded that has what I would consider attractive recovery. And it is attraction rather than promotion. So, you know, I remember I was 3 or 4 years sober. I had a good friend of mine in Boston that was using. And I started to talk to him about AA. And he goes to me, he says, if you're the poster boy for 12-step program, he goes, I think I'll pass. I mean, that's the kind of recovery I had. I never forgot that because it is an attraction. And that's one of my prayers every day to Jesus, is that when people look at me, let them see you and not what you see in me. Let them see you, because it's, I know what I am, you know, I got a good whiff.
Yeah, we have to submit to Jesus to serve other people. And there's that part in, I think it's in Ephesians, guys, where it talks about, you know, wives, submit to your husbands and that. But we need to submit to Jesus in order to get our egos out of the way and our pride out of the way and, you know, work with other people. And I guess the true joy, Jeff, that I get in my recovery, and there's a lot of it, is what we were talking about earlier. When you see somebody else God touches and, you know, you were able to share that with them, I don't think it gets better than that.
No, I agree with you. I'm talking to a friend of mine today who, he's the one that God used to disciple me 15, 18 years ago, I guess. It was interesting. He runs a class that is, he does a Bible study at his golf course for anybody that wants to come.
I like this guy.
Yeah, he is. He's a real cool guy. But he's got a 10 list of 10 people you pray for. And he says, I use you as an example because I prayed for you and your wife for 7 years before you, Christ captured you. So, it's not necessarily, you know, what was it? I don't know who said it. God invented time. Man invented the watch. You know, we tend to want to micromanage God. So it's not in our, you know, it is time. But just praying for somebody else gets you out of yourself.
Yes.
There's no smaller package than a man wrapped up in himself. I heard that once.
That's excellent. I'm encouraged by that fact that the guy prayed for 7 years.
Yeah, here's another thing. It was really funny. I went to his house after, we were good friends and everything. And, you know, I came to know the Lord. And, you know, I'm at his house in Texas. And he's got this big jar of jelly beans on his counter, and I walk over to get a handful. He goes, stop. I go, what do you mean? He goes, every one of those jelly beans is an answer to a prayer. And he goes, you and Tammy are in there somewhere, trust me. And I go, I hope it's not a licorice one. I don't like licorice jelly beans. So nobody does it alone. And I had, again, looking back over the last few years, I had been gradually more and more isolated, and just kind of living my own little life away from people who could hold me accountable and know me and that knew me. And they would have seen the signs. They really would have.
You know, sure.
Kind of hard to miss when you break every club in your bag on the 18th fairway. You know?
Is that a bad sign?
That's just a fact. I didn't break every club. I left the putter and the three wedges because I happen to like my wedges. So
I heard a guy one time talking about saying the resentment prayer. Had a huge resentment against his mother. And he said, you know, we say these prayers and we want instant results. And he said, this prayer I had to pray 1,251 times before the resentment against my mom was lifted. And it was like, for me, Jeff, my whole life I've been going, okay, you say these magical prayers and everything changes. And we've got to be persistent here.
We've got to, so a person
praying for you for 7 years, 10 years, that was very encouraging to me, because a lot of the prayers, like the seven-step prayer, we say it, and gosh, I don't have any shortcomings anymore. Well, I still got them, and I need to say these prayers every day and sometimes many times a day.
Absolutely. I pray every day for 5 people religiously, and my brother is one of them. My brother has lived on and off the streets of Chicago forever. He's now 2 years clean.
Oh, great.
And I'm talking 5-6 years when I really started praying in earnest every day. Holy Spirit, he can't do it without you. He used to call me from the alley when he had it, you know, when he'd clean up and get his life together, and then he'd go running again. And it was very funny. You know, you guys are going to kick out of this. I asked him what the catalyst was, because, you know, I mean, he'd been wrestling. He'd been in and out of rehab since he was in his early 20s. And he got sober at 60 or 59. So I said, what hit you? finally, you know. And he said, it's that first drink. I looked at him and I went, really? He goes, yeah. I don't know what it is. It's that first one. I have that first one, and I wind up in a crack house. So I go, wow, that's amazing. It's amazing when God, bam, because there's no other way he got it. He heard that 1,000 times. He'd been in out of AA for, you know, 30 years and rehabs and halfway houses. You're going to tell me they didn't tell him, don't have the first one? But at what point, maybe it's the prayer. I don't know. I don't know how many people. I used to ask audiences to pray for my brothers. So I don't know if he had thousands of people. And finally God said, all right. And, you know, I got to reveal this to that boy. Because you can't do it without God's revelation. You just can't. It's just verbal ping pong is all it is. It's just words.
Well, a dead man doesn't know he's dead, you know.
That's it. And that pride and, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do. And who am I hurting?
Jeff, you touch on a couple of great things here. The isolation, Billy, I think we all do that. That's my first step in walking away from God and going into the relapse process. I start isolating.
Yeah, you become the lone wolf. And you know what happens to those guys.
Yeah, I know. So when I would talk to my temporary sponsees, you know, have you gone to meetings? I don't really need to go.
Yeah.
You know, hi, what are you doing for service? What are you doing for others? Hey, I'm really busy, man. I got work. You found time to hit the bars 10, 12 hours a day, right? You know?
Yeah.
You can't find an hour, you know, to meditate, to think on somebody other than yourself. You know, that's what I was told early on. Find something in the universe bigger than you. Well, that took me 9 years.
So you got it pretty quick, actually, is what happened. A lot of us struggle with that every day. When you had talked about what God does, we take credit for it. And I think when we come back here, we can discuss that a little bit.
We will. We're going to take a very short break. Yeah. And when we come back, we're going to wrap things up with Jeff Allen. You're listening to Real Recovery on My Faith Radio. Be back in a minute. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Real Recovery. I'm feeling a little out of tonight's conversation, George, because you and Jeff are golfers. I am not.
He's a good golfer. I am not.
I used to. I played miniature golf last summer. Got a caddy. It was really a. He ended up giving me bad advice as I was trying to get through the windmill. So I punched him. The whole thing was a mess. I really wished I hadn't have done that. So.
Well, you gotta give it another shot, Bill.
Maybe next summer I'll give it another shot.
Well, it's coming around.
Thank goodness.
We've been talking about some very interesting aspects of recovery and about, you know, isolating. We all tend to do that. A lot of us need alone time. But, Jeff, what do you see as the difference between alone time and isolation for you?
Well, alone time to me is not alone. I'm trying to talk to God. I feel I worship a living God. So isolation is when you're in your head and all you're thinking about are your circumstances and your problems and, you know, what the person, the resentments, the things that people did to you, and if only, and if you're starting a lot of sentences with only, if only, this would be different or if only, then you're in yourself and you're isolated. You know, I used to drink in crowded bars, but I was isolated.
Yep.
Always. Nobody knew me. Nobody would come over. I remember asking a bartender one night. I went to this place every night, 5 nights a week after work when I was working a job, 5 nights a week, sit with the same stool, same bartender. And at one point after like 3 or 4 months, I said to the guy, how come nobody talks to me? He goes, because you just don't look like you want to be talked to. You know, you have a big scowl on your face. You gotta, you know, and, okay. But I used to be able to drink in a crowded place because I read something about alcoholism. It said if you drink alone, you're an alcoholic. Well, I never drank alone. I was always in a bar. But I was alone, and I was in my head, and I was in my own circumstances. I think alone time is, God, what do you want for me? Thy will be done. You know, please direct my steps. Guide me on the path that you have chosen for me. You know, or just quiet time. You know, I used to talk to a pastor who said that he writes his whole sermon based upon a single verse. He'll just pick a verse out of the Bible. He thinks it's all inspired by God, all of it. So whatever verse he picks, he feels that given enough time, God will inspire him to create a sermon around it. And he's done that for 20 years. He's a brilliant theologian. So that's not isolation, or that's alone time, that kind of meditation and stuff. So that's the way I look at it.
Jeff, it makes me think of Psalm 119, verses 10 and 11. It says, I seek you with all my heart. Do not let me stray from your commands. I have hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. So if you're seeking him with all your heart, probably a good thing to do in prayer and meditation.
Yeah, it's hard to do that in a disco, you know.
I agree.
You need to have quiet.
Well, you talked earlier, Jeff, about needing to get out of our own head and connect with somebody else or connect with God. And I see that, Bill, with the big problem for a lot of us in our Christian walk is we wander. We're prone to wander away from God and other believers, and we got to keep that sense of community up, and we got to be a part of it rather than be separated from it.
Good point.
I also think you need to be careful with who you community with, and I'm not talking about the guys you golf with on a golf course, but I'm talking about who you seek. We live in a postmodern world, and that's another thing that I've realized is that I got around a lot of guys that were sitting right along with me. You know, my father, when he was 40 pounds overweight and had back problems and smoked 2 packs a day and drank a fifth of whiskey, went to 6 or 7 different doctors, and he said the same thing to the doctor. Don't tell me to lose weight. Don't tell me to quit smoking. And don't tell me to quit drinking. Fix my back. And every one of those first 5 or 6 doctors said to him, well, you've diagnosed the problem. If you're not going to do that, then your back won't get fixed. Until he found somebody that was 100 pounds overweight, smoked 3 packs a day, and drank 2/5 a day, a doctor that told him, hey, you're fine. Your lifestyle's fine. That's what I found myself doing in church, is that the people that I allowed in were sitting right along with me. And it was a nice little club we had. So I was able to compartmentalize my life. I gave a lot of my life to God, probably 90% of my life to God, but I had this 10% over here that was wrapped around lust that I really wanted to hang on to, you know. And that finally just started to creep into 20% of my life, 30% of my life, and then all of a sudden it became a part of my and then, you know, 3 or 4 months ago when I went to deal with it in a 12-step program, you realize now the devil says, oh, you want to get rid of it. It wasn't enough to leave it at 10%. Now you just want to get rid of it, all of it. You want to give all of your life to God. Well, good luck. And that was the hell that I went through for the past few months, was trying to let go of that. Man, I'm telling you, it's the human mind and the human heart. It fascinates me.
Jeff, I've been looking at Proverbs 13:20 all week, and last week it says, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm.
That's it.
That's it,
I have
isn't
now
it?
Surrounded myself with people around me who, one, will not tolerate my crap, who don't care where my station in life is, that I'm an entertainer that people like. I said, I was writing in my blog today, I said, if my wife would only read my press clippings, she would know I was a good guy. You know, but it is who you counsel, who you seek counsel from, matters. And we live in an extremely postmodern world, and the Christian church is infected with a lot of that postmodernism. There is no truth. There is no ultimate truth. There is no, you know, and if you're just a good person, you know, that's that New Age stuff. It didn't work for me.
Moral relativism. There are no absolutes. Isn't that an absolute in itself that kind of self-refutes the theory? We do get that, and we need to be around biblically grounded Christians that are walking the walk because, gosh, it's easy to start compromising. And you talk about compartmentalizing your life. I think one of the great things I've gotten out of your story the last 2 hours that we've had you on is that Jesus, if he's going to be Savior, needs to be Lord over all areas of my life.
And
you know, we knock down maybe the drinking and the drugging, but then we got to get to who we are. And,
right.
You know, for me, what you're talking about, being alone, I start catastrophizing in my head. You know, 5 minutes, I got my funeral planned, you know, and just that negativity and getting back to God, getting on my knees, being with Bible-believing people that have a strong sense of community. Great stuff tonight.
You know, when I knew the Holy Spirit was really working in me again, I mean, really, when God was presence was there, was with all the little lies that I tell in the course of a day. I would, you know, as they popped into my head and I started to speak, that voice would go, that's a lie. And then I would tell the truth, you know. That's how God works in me. It's that subtle and that easy.
That's pretty profound, Jeff. That's pretty profound.
You know, I said to Tammy one day, I go, when did I become such a freaking liar again? You know, what'd you shoot today? You know, if I shot 74, I'd say 72. You know? And my brain would go, that's a lie. And I'd have to go, I'm sorry, man. I shot 74. You know, gosh. Anyway, that kind of stuff. And, you know, you could blow it off and say it's benign, it doesn't really matter, it's just little simple things, but those things grow into really big, big things. And I don't want to be that person, you know. And again, I surround myself now with people that are in work in the steps that have a God-centered life and who are trying to surrender all to God, which is extremely important to me. That's my prayer today when I wake up in the morning, is that show me where I still have control and give me the courage to give up that control and lay it at your feet. And I'm kind of frightened about that, because every time I've prayed to Jesus to show me anything in my heart, I wind up in the fetal position in a bathroom in a hotel somewhere.
That's an excellent point.
It is.
Yeah, you know, it's not always a pleasant thing, but in the end, when the cleansing process is done, the joy, and I mean joy, not happy, I'm joy, which to me goes to the bone. Happy is just a temporary state of mind, where joy is from the heart, and it goes to your bones. And people see that. You see that in people. I can look at Tammy and I do it. We'll watch a show on television like American Idol, and without even saying it, just by looking in their eyes, you could say, "I bet you she, I bet you he's a believer."
Yeah, no kidding. But Jeff, if people want to get to your website, take a peek at what you do, where would they go?
JeffAllenComedy.com. Don't go to JeffAllen.com. That's a XXX rated site, I think.
Okay. Well, JeffAllenComedy.com would be
JeffAllenComedy.com, and then Twitter at JeffAllenComedy, and Facebook is Jeff Allen.
It's been just a blast having you on the air. Thank you so much for your powerful testimony. I'm going to have to take some time to process some of the stuff you said, this giving God 90% of your
great,
life.
Man. Anytime you come to Nashville, give me a call ahead of time. We'll take you to the Greystone Golf Course.
Man. I'm
good.
On that.
It sounds like an excellent steakhouse. Well, thanks very much.
You don't want to eat there. You just want to play golf.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, man. Thank you, guys. Have a blessed month out there in the land of the rocks and sand, man.
I will. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, man.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We hope you've had a good hour with us. We've had a blast. You've been listening to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Fraser, who have been sitting in tonight for Bill Arnold and George Fraser. We've got stunt doubles, George. I don't know if you know that.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, they're in tonight.
They're
in tonight.
Okay.
But we're looking forward to next time. We're an award-winning show every Sunday night. Starts at 7, ends at 8. So we're thrilled you joined us tonight. We really hope you have a great week. Good night, and God bless.